The man is a demon, and I never take a demon as a prisoner. He is your enemy, American. He hates and he kills. He is the devil. We want you to kill this evil.
No!
I...
Hello and welcome to Hello, This is the Doom Show. I am Richard. Folks, I got Ian here. Ian Urza. Hello, sir.
Hey, how's it going? Really thankful for this opportunity. I've always loved this show and it's fun to be a part of it.
Yay. Well, we'll see how you feel after. You'll probably be like, man, what a mistake. What have I done?
Well, it's funny. I feel like I'm the only person in the world who would say, let's do Strike Commando. You know, like when you were messaging me, like, pick some movies out that you might want to cover on the show. I'm like, I kind of want to do Strike Commando with you. I feel like that would be a fun show to do.
It's a subgenre that we've never touched on this show, which is Italian action. In fact, this might be like maybe not the first action movie, but we're pretty close to like untouched freaking genre excitement here.
Well, when Greg and I covered The Last Hunter on Land of the Creeps for a bonus episode, I talked a little bit about the macaroni combat genre, as it's sometimes called, and nomsploitation is even more of a specific part of it, because in the early 80s, like, the Italians had been making war movies before that, but they were all like World War II based, including one specific one, actually. I think Dario Argento had a hand in writing Probability Zero with Henry Silva.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then you had Inglourious Basterds, probably the most infamous of all of the macaroni combat movies, obviously, because of the remake. But then in 1980, Antonio Margheriti makes The Last Hunter, and that brought a new breath to the genre in a way, because they started making Vietnam movies. And Margheriti went on to make several ones that were sort of mercenary based, but then Bruno Mattei had his hand in it in the late 80s, and all five of the movies that he made in the late 80s are ones that I love. Like, I like Bruno Mattei's movies, actually, but my favorite ones are like the five or six action movies he directed. Robo War is a little separate, but he did Strike Commando, Strike Commando 2, Cop Game, Double Target, and Born to Fight. All five of those are basically macaroni combat films combined with ripoffs of other movies.
I think you're talking about Vincent Dawn.
Yes, Vincent Dawn.
I don't know who this Bruno guy is.
Vincent Dawn. It also the perfect name for like a porn director, Vincent Dawn.
So yes, this is Strike Commando from 1987. We're gonna do some spoilers, but this is one of those movies where we can spoil it for you, but honestly, we can't. You have to see this thing to believe it. Bruno Mattei as Vincent Dawn. We got co-writer with Clyde Anderson, a.k.a. Clodo Fregasso, or Fregasso. And, of course, a person that's come up, I think, on a Jeffrey episode is Rosella Drudy.
Yeah, she was I don't know if she's married to Claudio Fregasso, but I do know that they were like boyfriend and girlfriend. Maybe they still are. They were writing collaborators on pretty much anything he did. And most of the time, from like basically the early 80s to 1990, he was working with Mattei on everything. I believe they had some sort of a falling out on Night Killer for whatever reason. I don't know why, but that was the movie where they kind of disbanded after that.
I had a falling out with myself for picking Night Killer to watch, because, man.
Oh, like, I kind of like that one, actually. It's not
It was the erotic stuff. It was the not quite rapey. It was the hostage situation, kind of like the sexy hostage thing. I was like, it's might just be sleazy. It might be too sleazy for me.
Yeah, you got the woman in that from Silent Night, Deadly Night giving a way worse performance than she ever did in Silent Night, Deadly Night. And you got Peter Hutton, who's just out of control in that movie.
Oh, my God. What was she in Silent Night, Deadly Night?
She was the mother at the beginning who gets shot. And
yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah, that's her.
I never knew. Thank you. That's hilarious.
I can't remember the actress's name, but yeah,
it was Melanie Beck. Oh no, wait, yeah. I'm sorry. No, that's her character's name. Tara Buckman is the name.
Yeah, Tara Buckman. That's right. Yeah.
That's so funny. Wow. Wow. You just made a connection in my brain I never had.
Yeah, it's like it's a thing where Bruno Mattei, and we'll talk about this as we go on, but like Bruno Mattei would have been to me actually a really good like second unit director of action, because if you see the action scenes in his films, they're actually pretty good. I would dare to say, and he uses the budget well. Brent Huff talked about this at one point, you know, while making Strike Commando 2, he just said we could use all the ammo we wanted. We didn't care about that stuff. So definitely no shortage of explosions as well. No. But when it comes to directing an entire film, there are some issues with Bruno Mattei's direction, especially like dramatic scenes. And he makes every single actor that is normally a pretty good dramatic actor, or at least better than they would be if they were in a Mattei movie, they're all kind of worse in whatever he's doing for the dramatic scenes. Like, not that Reb Brown's a very good dramatic actor, but I think he's better in other movies with it than he is in this. And his performance in this, I've always described as just an immaculate performance, because it's so incredibly bad that it's so incredibly entertaining.
It's transcendent. So here's a trailer. I found this freaking bizarro trailer. My issue with Italian trailers most of the time is that they're 3 minutes and there's not a lot of voiceover. There's not that cool voiceover guy, and it's just all the best beats in the movie. And so I was just going to play a small snippet of the Italian one, but then I found something marked in production trailer. It's 2 minutes, but it has a very, very, I've never done a voiceover before voiceover guy. So we're going to play 30 seconds or so of this thing. It almost sounds like a fan made, but they're probably just trying to sell the movie to distributors, pre-sales as they used to do. So here's that trailer.
Strike Commando. When they sent Mike Ranson into Vietnam to blow up a vital bridge, they didn't bargain on him getting out alive. But Mike Ranson is a highly skilled member of Strike Commando, and there's just two things on his mind: survival and revenge. Strike Commando, coming soon.
I'm not going to read the paragraph from the back, because I just usually just grab the plot synopsis from the back of these VHS tapes. But the International Video Entertainment Incorporated VHS tape, it is a full, long paragraph detailing the entire movie. So instead of that, I'm just going to go with the IMDb, which says, in the Vietnam War, an American soldier survives a botched mission with help from a group of locals who perceive him as a hero. He's sent back for a reconnaissance mission, only to find his helpers massacred by a brutal Russian soldier. 92 minutes. Nailed it. Before we jump into the plot, we've got music by Luigi Ciccarelli. I'm brutalizing his names. I'm brutal. He did Rats, Knights of Terror. And he did Vampire in Venice, which Vampire in Venice, very special movie. I want to cover that on this show one of these days. We got cinematography by Riccardo Grassetti, who shot, God help him, Zombie 3, Robo War, and Shocking Dark.
Okay, so a Mattei collaborator there.
Exactly.
Zombie 3, I actually think is pretty good.
I think
Mattei stepped his game up for that one a little bit more than usual. I think he knew that I kind of have to try on this film because it's technically a Lucio. It's Lucio Fulci's name is on it. So I'm going to try a little harder. I've always thought that that movie felt like a Resident Evil video game more than almost any Resident Evil movie does. Oh, minus man. The new one, the Resident Evil Welcome to Raccoon City, which I actually think feels more like a Resident Evil game than any of the other ones.
Yeah, totally. Oh, man. Good call. Yeah. No, Zombie 3, never a dull moment ever. No slack on that one. RoboWar, I liked it okay, but I would never sit through it again. It was where them imitating, that was the Predator one, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's like Predator and RoboCop combined. Yeah.
And it just got, some of the stuff got where I actually wished I was watching Predator, whereas with Shocking Dark, I didn't feel that way. I felt... Because Shocking Dark is Alien meets Terminator, and I love that.
Yeah, with some actually pretty decent effects work on the Terminator guy at the end, I will say.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, man. Yeah, Shocking Dark. That's something special.
I wonder if Stivaletti had a hand in the effects in that one. I don't remember because they almost look like his kind of effects, but I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. As far as the cast goes, this is led by our friend and yours, Reb Brown, as Sergeant Michael Ransom. Reb Brown, I forgot that he was the hunter from the future. Completely dropped the ball. I hadn't thought of that movie in years.
He's in The Howling 2 as well, I think.
Yes, that is the other thing that I'm all fired up about Howling 2. That is one of those movies I hated the first time. And then the second time, I was like, how could I have hated this? And that led me to, of course, Howling 3, which is even crazier.
He was also the backup running back to O.J. Simpson at USC.
Well, you know me, Mr. Sports. You barely beat me to that. No, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Well, one day he O.J. turned to him and said, "You should be in movies." And he's like, "I'm on it."
Yeah. Both of them had pretty competent movie careers.
Crazy.
OJ
crazy.
Up until a certain point. It's funny. I don't know. It's one of those things I can watch the three Naked Gun movies. And I'm like, did he ruin these movies for me or not? It's hard. It's like one of those things. Every scene he's in, I'm like, oh, I wish he was. I wish this was someone else. I wish this was like Bernie Casey or something.
Yeah, stop being a murderer. Yeah. Next up, of course, we've got Christopher Connolly, who plays Colonel Raddick, and Christopher Connolly from everyone's favorite Manhattan Baby.
No, not my favorite.
No, it is no one's
there's
favorite.
I can't even play sarcastic with that one, but
I love it. But it's one of those movies that I totally get why people don't like it. It just is. I'm so desperate for Fulci from that era that opened up to me after I was like, dying to see it again, and I was like, whoa, this is just like a B-side, like a bad B-side to a great record. You know, it's just, it's more of the same, but not. I love Manhattan Baby, but yeah, Connelly, no defending it.
Christopher Connolly is giving Cameron Mitchell a run for his money in this one, in the sweat factor.
He's
sweating like crazy.
God, I can't imagine filming under these conditions, and I live in Florida.
I'm like, what did Christopher Connolly do throughout the 1970s? Because like, he must have like smoked a lot of cigarettes or drank a lot, because you look at the way he aged. If you look at pictures of him when he was young, like when he was in a bunch of sitcoms and stuff, and you're like, geez, what happened in those 10 or 15 years? Because once you see him in like Bronx Warriors in the early 80s, he just looks rough.
Yeah, had to be smoking and drinking. He was like, water. I've got whiskey here.
he is a badass in Raiders of Atlantis, though. Love him in that movie.
Yeah, I just got that Blu-ray and watched it with Movie Party Crew, where we watched it and tweeted about it before we gave up on Twitter. And I really enjoyed that. That was a instant favorite. And I don't know how I'd missed it for so long. I think it was because I just had the VHS rip, and I was just like, this has got to have a DVD one of these days. And then fast forward, and suddenly it had a Blu-ray. It's like, yay! We've got good old Louise Comstig as Olga, the Russian soldier. This lady, I've only seen her in, was it Naked You Die? No, Fashion Crimes. And she was in Bloody Psycho. Those are the ones I know her from.
I have not seen her in anything else, so not that I know of anyway.
I know I'm mixing up Bloody Psycho with Massacre. Oh, I got something to look forward to. Hey, Italian horror I haven't gotten to yet. Yeah. Then we got good old Luciano Pigozzi from everything. He plays La Due.
He's one of those people who, he worked in every genre you can kind of think of from the 60s to, you know, the late 80s. And he, in the 80s, he's like a character actor superstar in the 80s because he appeared in a ton of the Macaroni Combat movies, like almost every one of the ones Margheriti made or Bruno Mattei made. He was in them. And a lot of the Mattei ones, if you look at his filmography, a lot of his scenes were deleted. Like he was in a couple of other ones, but his scenes were deleted for whatever reason, though he does appear in Double Target and he gets just about as bad of a death in that one as he does in this. I remember.
Yeah, he's in his Beardo phase in this one where he's just like every movie he shows up in, his beard is just bigger and bigger and bigger. He's definitely having fun here. So far as I can tell, it's not like the Bloodsucker Leads the Dance where he just looks like he's ashamed of himself. That rape scene in that movie it's like, man, you done him dirty by making him do that. Get out of here with that shit. I would love to see people's reactions when that gets a freaking Blu-ray one day. It's just freaking hideous. We got Alex Vitale as the most important character, Jakota. This guy, oh man, I don't recognize. I don't know what character he played in the movie, but like the other one I've seen with him was Hands of Steel, but he had like a bit part in Hands of Steel. Oh no, he was in Beyond the Door 3.
What? I'm trying to think of who he played. I Hands of Steel is my. I'm kind of ashamed that I didn't recognize him because if he's in that, I'm trying to remember.
A security guard.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like
I'll have to look for him next time because it's one of those things where I wasn't even thinking about that. That is my favorite of the Italian post-apocalyptic movies. I love that film.
So. Yeah, I've seen Hands of Steel, but it was like years ago when the on a rip I found of the VHS tape. I don't remember it at all. I remember that.
Yeah, it's Daniel Green and like Brent Huff, but Daniel Green for sure are like my two favorite stars of like late 80s Italian genre films. And Daniel Green worked with Sergio Martino a lot. Like he was in like five of Sergio Martino's films from that time because he's in American Rickshaw. He's in the movie The Opponent that Sergio Martino did, the boxing movie.
Ooh, I haven't heard of that one.
And what's it? I think Operation Condor or something like that, where he plays like a journalist, and it's very similar to like the Uncharted video games. I've heard people compare that movie to those a lot. So
okay,
yeah.
So a character named Major Harriman is played by two people, Major Harriman or Harriman. Either way, he's Harry. It's Mike Monti, who's in tons of stuff.
Zombie 3. He's basically playing the same character he played in Zombie 3.
Yeah, tons of stuff. But also, he was voiced by William Berger.
Yep.
According to the trivia. And I was like, whoa, that's incredible.
I didn't know that until I looked it up, until I saw it. Yeah, that he was.
Oh, man. Imagine William Berger just in that scene. Because, like, William Berger was so busy in the 80s.
Yeah.
It was some movie where he was in 11 movies in 1 year. Oh, it was Dial Help.
He
played Diodati. He shows up at the airport because
his heart explodes or whatever.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, I'm in 11 movies this year, so I can meet you at the airport. And we're like, well, we'll write the scene in the airport instead of a library.
Talk about another Italian genre movie that needs a Blu-ray, Dial Help.
Thank you. That's one of my favorite first time watches from last year. Blew me away. And
the washing machine.
Oh, man. Yeah. A washing machine I'd like to see again. I don't know if I'd buy it. I liked it. But
we got a Phantom of Death Blu-ray. I'm happy about that.
What the hell? That's great. Dial Help. That's next level. So anyway, that's my main picks from the cast. Those are my main.
I had one more to add, too.
Who do you got?
It's a guy in a small role. I'm trying to find him. Rene Abadeza. He plays the Viet Cong soldier that Reb Brown is like, take me to Jakota. And he tries to stab him in the back, and Reb Brown ends up killing him. He's another guy who appeared in a ton of these movies in the 80s. Like, he's in a ton of Matei's other films, and I recognize him. I'm like, he plays like a Viet Cong soldier or one of those in every single one of these movies. So if you see any of the other films, you'd recognize him from those.
Nice.
Hey there, folks. It's Editor Richard cutting in here. I totally forgot, and I think Ian forgot too. There's this really racist joke at the beginning of this movie. It's seriously one of the first lines of dialogue in this movie. It pertains to watermelon, and it is not good. It is, I don't expect, the Italian filmmakers of this era to be progressive or anything, but for a movie made this late in the 80s and they're still throwing that kind of crap around, it's pretty bad. It never comes up again, and the movie has other racial issues to deal with, as we'll talk about as we go along. But yeah, just want to give you a heads up. It's gross and bad, but what are you going to do? The movie is made, and as much as I've tried, I can't unmake it. Back to the show.
So the movie starts. We get this this fateful mission, and my favorite thing about this fateful mission is that holding still makes you invisible. So Reb Brown as Mr. Ransom, they're going into this Vietnamese base to wreck shit. And every time the searchlight passes over them, they just hold really still. And even though they're completely illuminated and they're the shapes of soldiers, they're invisible. It's great. Radek and his team, they're not strike commandos. They're the support crew who are out there. They have the place wired to explode. And Radek is going to blow everybody up because he doesn't want the mission to fail. And Ransom's superior officer is there. Just give him time. Give him time. And he doesn't give them time. And he blows the shit up while the strike commandos. So all of the strike commandos are killed except our pal Ransom. And he magically turns into a tree and floats down the river. I mean, he had to have been underwater for what? Hours? Just yeah. Hours. Just brain dead for hours. And then he's discovered by some very desperate Vietnamese people who rescue him. One of my favorite things about him waking up is the ghostly faces. So all of these people just start screaming, and they look like
ghosts. Then you get Reb Brown's first crazy scream of the movie. Yeah.
And then he's hanging upside down, but they cut him loose. What is this dynamic with him and these people? Ian, what is going on?
It's almost like it's weirdly serendipitous filmmaking, because it's almost like the biggest stereotype you could think of, like the white savior. Yep. You know, it's funny how like this movie is almost like parodying the white savior idea. And I don't even think it's intentional.
Lietta was watching this with me, and her jaw dropped when they were just worshiping him like American, American, American. She's like, what is going on here? And I was like, I don't know. We got a white savior problems. Yeah, he's there with Lau, his new buddy. He makes friends with this one kid. And Luciano Pagazzi's there as La Due, the French soldier who's now like a freedom fighter. They try to get him to kill someone, but he won't do it. And La Due explains to him, like, oh, you let him down, man. You can't show mercy. What's wrong with you? It's really weird. So they go on a trek together. So they're going to help him on his mission to go kill. He's looking for Radek, who betrayed him, but he's also looking for these Russians. It's the plot is murky here. I'm not crazy, right? It's sort of like,
no, I think I actually think Pagosi is the one who talks to him about Russians being there.
Okay.
I think he's just, I think he's just leading them through. I think he ends up wanting to liberate them, because when he gets back, and Radek basically does like the whole Rambo 2 thing, go take some photographs to make sure we know that there are Russians there. He's like, okay, only under the condition that you liberate the people who are with me. So I think that was what he was going for at a certain point. I mean, I think he basically wants to become a father to Lau as soon as he meets him, for whatever reason. They talk about going to Disneyland together. So
Get them to Saigon and get them out.
Yeah.
I think I overthought it. Because it was just like, Jakarta! So he ends up blowing up a boat, which is, there's two blowing up a boat scenes that feature one of my favorite things in this movie, which is grenades with really, really long fuses.
Yeah.
Which I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, like, the second blow up, is he just activating the grenades or is there another fuse attached to it? Like, because I didn't even think about that, actually. One of the best examples of that in films is Die Hard 2. I don't know if you know the scene I'm talking about, but Die Hard 2 has a scene where they're William Sadler and all his men are tossing the grenades into like the plane that McClane is taking cover in, and the grenades, they toss them in and it's like a solid minute before anything happens. I'm like, the fuse on a grenade is like 5 seconds, if that. It's, I don't even think it is that.
Yeah, so it's very, the time is fuse time is very fluid in this movie. Ransom meets back up with his buddies, with Lau and the rest of the freedom fighters. They've been completely slaughtered. And the only one left alive is Lau. And they talk about a very special place. Ian, what very special place did they talk about?
Disneyland. What does he say? Like, cotton candy grows on trees. There's yep. like chocolate and malt. And any wish can be granted to you by the magic genie. It's like, it's such a terrible performance by Red Brown that it's so good. Like, is just his emoting is amazing.
He's ugly crying is so good. I love his ugly crying.
Amanda, tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there. Yeah. All you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it. And there's cotton candy, mountains of it. And chocolate milk and malt. And there's a genie, a magic genie. And he can't wait to grant your wishes.
Tell me the most important three-syllable word in this entire film. That's
Jakarta. And then Red Brown has like different levels of crescendos to his scream. So he like yells it, but then he like really screams it. Like, he's like, oh, Jakarta. The second time he does it, like, it's so good how he, it's, and I've always said this, you know, and I got this from, I think it was Brian Clark of the Attack of the Killer podcast. He's like, I think Reb Brown thinks that his scream like increases bullet velocity and does more, and it like increases the damage. Like, I've always thought his screaming, I think he thinks is like the stopping power perk from like Call of Duty, where this like, nice. Or the rapid fire attachment on, you know, like on guns where it just makes the gun fire faster or do more damage. Cause he does it a lot in this movie and in Robo War.
To age myself with a video game reference, it's when you scream heavy barrel and then you kill everyone on the screen with one shot, because that's what heavy barrel does.
Heavy barrel.
You're welcome, everybody at home who remembers heavy barrel. Wow. There's two Jakartas that are like my favorite Jakarta. There's many Jakartas, but this is my favorite. So the first one is the one where he's carrying Lau, the dead Lau, and he's got that echo. So there's an echo effect on the Jakarta. But then 2 minutes later, 2 minutes of screen time later, he's got his big, like, I want to say the big machine gun, not of M16. M60. Thank you. I was never going to remember that. So the M60. And then he suspects that Jakarta is in a hut and just screams Jakarta 3 times while firing this machine gun. It's glorious. It is so good. He's still mad about Disneyland. So my favorite scene and my favorite Reb Brown voice acting, or just acting with his beautiful voice moment, is when he goes and destroys the big boat, not the little boat, the big boat. And this time he sneaks on the boat, and he's got, again, grenades that have 2 minute long fuses because that's how grenades work. And he throws tons of grenades in this thing. And as he's trying to escape, which it doesn't make any sense because he's killed everyone on the boat. He doesn't even have to blow it up anymore. He just take the boat and keep it. But no, he's determined to blow it up. And as he's trying to escape, one of the guys he thought was dead is alive and attacking him. And the, you know, the clock's ticking. You can't stay on a boat full of grenades forever. So finally he kills this guy, tells him, like, shut up, and then kills him. And then as he's jumping off the boat, he goes, our Father who art in heaven.
Yes. I do. I was like, I'm hoping you're going to. He's like, I always signed up. It's so funny. So he's like, our Father who art. They can't even finish it before the. It's. Yeah. You need the Green Goblin to pop up for the first Spider-Man and be like, finish it.
Oh, my God. It's totally insane. That moment was really great. That was tops.
Our Father who art in heaven.
I get confused about the order of things here, and I don't care.
I'm already doing it too, and I watched this movie twice within the past like week and a half.
I'm so confused. So he's escaped from the prison. He runs off with Olga, who I really thought Olga was going to be a love interest, but there's no time for that. I thought she was going to make it through the end of the movie.
Well, like there's a part where like he's being tortured by Dakota, and like him and Olga make eyes for a second. You're like, oh, there's something here.
And of course she has a almost dies, you know, then, but then she turns on her team and actually saves Ransom by screaming so he won't get killed by one of the baddies.
Well, yeah, because he's in the prison. You get him meeting Martin Boomer, I think it was. Martin the faint-hearted, as he calls himself.
Oh, he's my, like,
I can't withstand physical pain. Yeah.
They get all these people.
Yeah, the prisoner who can't take physical pain. He's like, that's why they paired me with you, because you're so brave.
Oh, and I'm even skipping the part where he's being forced to read.
Well, that's right before he makes his. Yeah, that's one of the other great Reb Brown moments. He's like, he's saying all this and he's like, that's why I want you to keep fighting. Stay here. Give them hell.
It's one of those things where they were trying to do to break the morals of the soldiers listening by having, you know, someone like Ransom, like being a turncoat and, you know, saying he'd gone to their side, but he uses the mic to do a mic drop of like an inspirational speech. Thank you for catching.
Yeah. That. Part of his escape right out of Rambo 2, where he puts the guy right on the electric, like the little electric fence thing in the hut, very shamelessly ripping off Rambo 2. It's funny when we get to Strike Commando 2 at some point, like that movie has way more versions of it. Like this is actually fairly tame in terms of the stuff it's ripping off compared to that film.
Oh wow.
But anyway, then you have his escape where he grabs like an AK-47, shoots a couple people, uses some grenades, and then he takes the flamethrower in the cave. You have his great scream when he uses the flamethrower.
Yes.
Surrounds them all with fire. And then he ends up doing like more Rambo 2 stuff. Like at one point he camouflages himself with like a bunch of grass and stabs a guy. Like then you have the moment, the great moment, the slow motion moment where he pops up out of the water with the AK-47 and shoots a bunch of people.
Oh man. Well, you know, what's funny is I haven't seen Rambo or Rambo 2 in well over 30 years. So my brain is like, yeah, I know this has got Rambo stuff in it, but I forget how much Rambo stuff is in this. I'm glad I forgot.
Well, yeah, it's there. And like you have two, like the infamous scene of Rambo, you know, destroying the control room at the end of Rambo 2. And then you have two versions of that in this, because the Dakota scene is kind of one of those. But then you have it the moment at the end where he goes to control him and he's like, Radek, you traitor. And then he shoots everything in the control room. That's the other. Yeah.
But then we get the ultimate fight. We get, well, the first ultimate fight where Ransom takes on Dakota, finally faces him. And this is where the skills of our director are the most or stretched the most thin. This fight choreography is hideous.
Like, yeah, it's pretty terrible, but it's pretty entertaining as well. Oh,
it's very entertaining. I am definitely not complaining.
You have the one scene where they're charging each other, like do this, like they both bang their heads, and then the makeup on them, like as soon as they do that, it's such a weird like cut. Then you think the fight's gonna go on longer, and it just kind of, and Ransom just throws him off the waterfall. And yeah, it's like right after that, like there's no falling action or whatever within this fight. It's just very, very, it starts off with a lot and then it ends very, very quickly.
Yeah. The headbutt scene is my favorite. That is one of my favorite moments when it's like, ah, and then the other guys, ah, and they just butt heads, but it's such a non moment. Like as soon as they collide, it's over. And I'm like, what? Oh man, it's so good. When he throws him off the cliff, I could not have predicted how Jakota is going to come back. I could not have predicted that. I mean, how could anyone have predicted that? Fast forward to the end of the war. Our pal Ransom is in Saigon and everyone's fleeing to get out of there. But Ransom's just walking down the street, looking like that 1,000-yard stare, broken, like a broken man just carrying that freaking M60 down the street. I love that part. It's so like trying to do a deer hunter or a insert any, you know, quote unquote serious movie about Vietnam here where he's got to make a statement. You know, I love that part. It's so good. Of course, he meets back up with his pal,
Harriman,
and Harriman gives him the lowdown of where Radek is located now. So he's got to go and finally settle the score with Radek.
And you get the end of the war, but then doesn't it flash forward to like 6 months after, and they're both in Manila or something watching a cockfight? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Didn't need that in my movie. You know, like one of the pieces of trivia was that some country just completely cut the cockfighting scene out. And because they cut every time they referred to the cockfighting scene, it was like 48 cuts had to be made.
is that an actual, like, is that I didn't even know that was a thing. Like, is that a thing in other countries?
Making two roosters fight each other?
Yeah.
That's a thing that happened here. That's a thing that used to happen right here in America. There's a movie, God, it's called Cockfighter, that was in the 70s. It was one of my favorite actors, Warren Oates. Warren Oates, 1974.
Oh, I like him. Yeah, I like him.
Oh, too. And Harry Dean Stanton.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Ed Begley Jr. I've never seen this movie. I just know about it. I just
won't
watch.
Surprised it's not directed by Sam Peckinpah. If it's a 70s movie with Warren Oates in it.
See, exactly. But also, Peckinpah, he had that scene in one of his movies where they're shooting the heads off of roosters. So he loved.
Yeah, well, they also had like at the beginning of the Wild Bunch, you had the ants and the scorpion. That was cool.
Yep. And poor scorpion.
But yeah, it's always funny like how many movies you see with like movies where you'll be in a foreign country and you see stuff like this. Like I always think of the beginning of Casino Royale, where I think it's like the snake and the mongoose in that.
Yes. Oh man, what we'll do for where life is cheap. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
This doesn't happen in America. So he goes to Radek's little headquarters there, and he uses another one of his super grenades that has the long fuse on it to scare the secretary.
Yeah.
You got about 2 minutes to get out of here. But of course, this time when he fights Jakota's got these special dentures. like Jaws from good old Moonraker or something. I don't understand. Like, we don't know what happened to Jakota's teeth. Did he punch Jakota's teeth out? Was that a thing that happened?
No, we never see that. I don't know if he lost them when he went over the waterfall. Like, I don't know if he landed teeth first on a rock or something. I can't think of any reason why all of a sudden he would have the teeth, but it's whatever. Go with
then
it.
So he shoves a grenade in his mouth and then blows up Jakota. Then he goes after Radek, And this is my last moment from the movie because it's like the end of the movie, which is Radek is listening to his men getting killed throughout his compound. And he's got his little 9mm and he's waiting. Oh, yeah. Michael Ransom, our hero, when he smuggled a gun in to this this compound, it looked like maybe an M16 in a gun bag. But then it's the M60 again.
The M60 is a huge weapon to conceal. Like, it is a big gun.
Ow. But instead of facing Radek, he just yells at him through the door and says, fuck this shit. And then grenade launchers him to a dummy death.
Yeah, which is great.
Oh, my God.
And then one of the best examples of a disclaimer at the end where he does like the whole, it is like any similarities to people living or dead is purely accidental. I'm like, this is like a fourth wall break that is just talking amazing. Right, it's one of the best ever.
Talking right to us. It's like, might be a coincidence, like one in a million.
Any similarity between persons living or dead, especially dead, is purely accidental. Yeah. Very accidental. Like one in a million, maybe.
That's frickin' Spike Commando. We can't sue them for how similar this movie was to our lives because of that frickin' that post-credit thing there, or pre-credit thing there.
Yeah.
Other than the trivia that I had, a couple pieces like the different version where they cut out the cockfighting, and Mr. Mike Monti's voice actor was actually William frickin' Berger. Did you have anything else? Do you know anything about this movie?
Not too much, other than I don't know if you have the Severin Blu-ray.
I do not.
I do. Well, so there is an extended cut on there, and Bruno Mattei, a lot of his films for that Severin put out, there is an extended cut with just like little bits of scenes. And I don't believe I didn't do any research on this, but there is a scene where Lau talks to his sister. And he's like, oh, the American would make an ideal husband for you. And I don't think that is in the theatrical cut. I think that's only in the extended cut where that woman seems to they seem to hint a little bit more at a possible romance between her and Ransom that ends up not being the case, of course. And I think Missing in Action 3 totally ripped that plot off, actually.
The other thing was that this had clips from The Last Hunter in it. Some of the helicopter footage and the explosions was from that movie.
If you watch like Born to Fight and Double Target and any of those movies, there is stock footage you can recognize from some of these films that he uses throughout some of the like exploding huts. As Severin would call these, the exploding hut movies. That's what David Gregory always calls these movies. And he reuses some of the footage for those explosions in a lot of the films and like the helicopters. It's very Godzilla like with how they would always use that same footage for the tanks rolling up on Godzilla and the tanks getting exploded by Godzilla.
Nice. Final thoughts about the movie. How do you feel about frickin' Strike Commando Part 1?
It's just a really fun film, and there are moments of I think some of his other movies do the shameless ripoff stuff a little differently. Like, but this film has a Rambo influence, but it also it works to me as a standalone film just because it's fun enough. There's a lot of explosions. There's some good like slow motion action. Like there is moments within this where the action is actually I wouldn't necessarily say. Well filmed. It's not necessarily well crafted, but the budget's there. Like there's a budget there for explosions and ammunition that you can feel. And it's done practically, unlike most modern movies. The explosions and everything are real. So and like even Claudio Fragasso talked about how the Filipino crew could build like some of these huts. Like that scene where Ransom destroys like a bridge when he's in the boat. The Filipino crew built that like whole bridge in a day. Just to be destroyed. So, you have different things like that where you could use like little things of production value to to increase the practicality of some of these explosions, and the stunts that are in the film are all pretty good. And I think Reb Brown is definitely doing some of his own at times.
It looked freaking dangerous. But no, I like this one. I the seams are showing in some parts, like that freaking fight choreography. The little model buildings being blown up too at the beginning. I was thinking about Antonio Margheriti when he would do model work too. I loved it.
Yeah.
The music is jamming. The freaking music is great. The white savior thing was mind blowing. Totally, totally mind destroying. I'm surprised I didn't watch this as a kid, because in the late 80s, I was obsessed with guns. I had like 25 different gun books, and I would just draw guns all day. I love guns. And so therefore, every action movie was like fair game. If you had a guy with a gun on the cover, and then I went through a phase of renting every Vietnam exploitation movie I could find, like the Missing in Action movies. And then there was some other American-made films that were set in Vietnam that were just like whatever. But I can't believe I didn't run across like The Last Hunter or run across this. Like even the David A. Pryor one.
Deadly Prey?
Yeah, I've still never seen Deadly Prey. I watched David A. Pryor's first one, where it's so weird, where it doesn't take place in Vietnam. It's people like pretending to be in Vietnam, to train each other. God, what was that movie called? It was bizarre. Kill Zone.
Yeah, I've heard of that one. Yep.
Kill Zone, bizarre, because it doesn't actually take place in Vietnam. It has a flashback to wherever they filmed, you know, in California, that's supposed to be Vietnam. But then the whole thing is that they're using these tactics to train these guys to be better soldiers, and manage to drive one of the soldiers insane where he thinks he's back in Nam, and hilarity ensues. But yeah, I never got to this one, but now I'm glad I did, and I'm very curious about the sequel, because
yeah, and it's interesting because in the late 80s and early 90s, you had and it's a genre I haven't gotten into much yet, although eventually I want to, were those like B action movies. And this would fall into that category, even though it's still part of the Italian genre, like the nomsploitation genre as well. But like you had a lot of movies that like Richard Harrison was doing with Godfrey Ho as an example of those kind of B action movies that were being made around that time.
So before we go, I ask my guests a question, and that is, tell me about tell me about a recently seen and loved film. So one film you've seen recently, any genre, doesn't even matter, as long as you enjoyed it, and it could be a first-time watch or something you've seen a million times. Do you have a favorite recent one you saw?
There were a couple, because I've been watching some Hong Kong cinema lately.
Yes.
I watched 36 Chamber of Shaolin for the first time. Love that movie. Ooh,
nice.
Another one I watched, which is a little bit less known from that movie, so I'll talk about it, is a movie called Undeclared War. It's a movie that Ringo Lam directed in the early 90s. I believe it's a Golden Harvest movie, and it's one of those Hong Kong action movies, and it's got Vernon Wells playing like this revolutionary terrorist in it, and Olivia Hussey also playing like a terrorist as well. And the guy from Ghoulies, I can't remember his name, Peter or something is the actor, teams up with Danny Lee from The Killer, and it's almost like a buddy cop movie between those two, trying to take down Vernon Wells as this terrorist who's like a master of disguise. It's some of the most fun I've ever seen Vernon Wells have in a movie, actually.
You know, I want to say, did this get a Blu-ray recently?
It did. It got a Vinegar Syndrome one. That's how I watched it.
Got it. That's where I've heard of it. Man, that cast and that plot sounds great. Holy shit. I'm going to stick with Asia as well, in Hong Kong, with a little movie called The Blue Jean Monster, from 1991, which is a interesting movie. It is a lead role for the heavy Fuyan Xing, who, if you look up Fuyan Xing, that guy, you've seen him before. If you've seen any Hong Kong action movies or comedies or anything, he's all over the place. But this was a leading role for him as the hero. Blue Jean Monster is stupid, stupid, The comedy is puerile and embarrassing at times. The horror stuff is really gross and nasty. And I don't know what I saw, but 88 Films brought this out on Blu-ray. And I thought for years that it was like a gritty, nasty, like Category 3 rape movie or something because of the title and because Fuyan Xing was the lead. But nope, it's just a weird, gross-out comedy horror movie that I recommend. But it's real dumb. It's really dumb. I can't stress that enough. Well, sir, thank you for joining me.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing Strike Commando into my life. Would you like to talk about some of the things that you do? Because I want you to promote.
Yeah. I'm on the Land of the Creeps podcast every couple weeks on the double episodes, part of the Black Glove mystery segment where me and Greg Morgan, aka Greg Immortus, talk giallo movies mostly and really just anything from Italian genre cinema. I have my own blog, The Good, The Bad, and The Macabre.blogspot.com. You can find me on Twitter or X and Instagram at Erzonomics, and you can add me on Facebook if you want.
I sadly did not pass my my Erzonomics courses. Now I'm making up for it. All right, man. Well, thank you once again for being here, and we'll definitely have you back. I'm intrigued by Strike Commando 2. I'm intrigued by other picks because you might be leading me down a totally new avenue.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll have Strike Commando 2. We'll look forward to Richard Harris absolutely slubbing it in a role. It's just like I couldn't believe that he was in it when I first read about it. Like on the Severin Blu-ray, they say Richard Harris, and they have in parentheses, yes, that Richard Harris. So, looking forward to that.
All right, folks, I'm a man called Horse. Bye.
Folks, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you'd like to write into the show, send an email to doomedmoviethon@gmail.com. Or hit us up at Doomed Movie-thon on Instagram, or at Doomed Movie-thon on Twitter, or at Doomed Movie-thon at Discord, or go to Hello This Is the Doomed Show on Facebook and message us there. If you want more Hello This Is the Doomed Show, go to doomedmoviethon.com and click the podcast button for the archive, or go to YouTube and look up Doomed Movie-thon and you'll find the classic episodes of Hello, This Is the Doomed Show. And if that's still not enough, I have written some books, you know, about my love of movies over on Amazon.com. Just look up Richard Glenn Schmidt and you'll find Giallo Meltdown, A Movie-thon Diary, Giallo Meltdown 2, Cinema Somnambulist, or Doomed Movie-thon, the book. Hello, This Is the Doomed Show is a proud member of the Legion Podcast Network. Go to legionpodcast.com and check out the other great shows over there.